1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Denver police say they've located the vehicle belonging to the 17-year-old who they say opened fire at Denver's East High School, injuring two administrators during a pat-down.
Both students and parents have recently been calling for increased security measures here at the school, from resource officers to be brought back to metal detectors to be installed. Now, the school is closed for the rest of the week, and once it reopens, the school district says two officers will be placed here for the rest of the year.
ABC's Mola Lange in Denver. One of the victims remains in serious condition, but Denver Health says another victim has been released. The National Weather Service confirms two tornadoes touched down in Southern California, one in Montebello today, another in Carpinteria yesterday. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis trying to expand the law that critics call Don't Say Gay to ban lessons on sexual orientation and gender identity from grades 4 to 12. Department of Homeland Security says its new fentanyl operation has already seized 900 pounds of the drug in its first week. This is ABC News. World Bank report says it will cost more than $410 billion for Ukraine to recover and rebuild from Russia's invasion over the next decade. Former British Prime Minister defending his record.
Did he or didn't he lie to lawmakers? Former Prime Minister Boris Johnson at a hearing that could seriously damage his political career.
I'm here to say to you, hand on heart, that I did not lie to the House. When those statements were made, they were made in good faith and on the basis of what I honestly knew and believed at the time.
The House of Commons Standards Committee questioned Johnson over statements he made to Parliament about a slew of parties in government buildings that breached lockdown rules. Tom Rivers, ABC News, London.
The Biden administration plans to overhaul the U.S. organ transplant system, which critics say has poor oversight that led to patient deaths. Among the planned changes, modernizing technology, improving accountability, and a request for more congressional funding. Andy Field, ABC News.
Hey folks, keep her moving to Civic Media every Saturday and Sunday at noon for the Cripescast with me, Charlie Behrens.
We've been out here all day. We've had five or six beers and only one fish.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Janet Protasiewicz says Wisconsin's political maps are unfair. It's not just her personal opinion.
The map issue has really kind of easy, actually. I don't think anybody thinks those maps are fair. Anybody.
The High Court is expected to take up Wisconsin's legislative boundaries in the near future. She faced Dan Kelly in the one and only debate at the state Supreme Court general election campaign yesterday. 82 school districts in Wisconsin are asking for more money this spring. That's about the same number as November in almost one in every five districts in the state. Most of the questions ask for money for day-to-day operations, but others want money for buildings. In sports, Wisconsin is going to the NIT Final Four next week after beating Oregon last night. The Bucks host San Antonio tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold. 1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003. 125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football. You're about to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Hey, son, how are you feeling? I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
Join us daily at therickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So a new mammoth poll out showing, and this is, again, you knew this, you have to know this is going to happen. As Trump is all the news, all consuming, sucking all the air out of the room, his numbers have gone up. Now, according to the mammoth poll, he went from February of 2023 to March of 2023 from 33% to 41%. DeSantis went backwards from 33% to 27%. Everybody else negligible. Right now, you've got the two, you know, being DeSantis and Trump. But Trump's, you know, because of this, all this talk of him being indicted, and I got to give him credit, he masterfully manipulated this to his benefit. And our media fell for it, for the clickbaiters. The question then becomes is how are Democrats gonna break through this time? I mean, we're seeing a repeat of 2016 where it's all about Trump, all of the media at his beck and call. So I've asked my good friend Fred Wellman to come share some thoughts with us. Fred is a Democratic strategist and host of On Democracy with FP Wellman. We'll get links out on how you can check out his podcast. Fred, woo-hoo. Thanks for taking time for us.
Always a pleasure joining, Rick. Thanks for having me, brother.
So I'm looking at this, and, you know, I got to be honest. I think what Trump did, you know, from a messaging standpoint, masterful, saying they're going to indict me on this day, a call to action. I'm the victim. This picture he's got of him kneeling and praying. Oh, my God, this is masterful.
No, I love it, man. Like, look, if the Republican Party wants to nominate a guy indicted for multiple crimes, I welcome it. I look forward to that conversation. Good luck. You know, the best of luck to him. I mean, look, Trump is not who he was. He has his moments. He's able to play these little games, get his minions to give him millions of dollars, and he plays them well. But he's not, again, I think I said something the other day. I was talking to somebody that the fact is he needs some normies. He needs normie Republicans. He needs people like some family members of mine, some older family members of mine, their 70s, 80s, who are traditional. They were traditional Republicans. They liked his style. They liked his, quote, policies. I love doing air quotes, policies, and that stuff. They'll become a bridge. There's quickly becoming a bridge too far where reasonable charges, you know, indictments. I mean, there are crimes. Crimes are crimes. Jack Smith's going to find crimes. Atlanta's going to find crimes that he's the normies that he would have gotten are not enough. If you remember that my previous work with the organization I work with during the campaign, which, you know, like a project, you know, our target audience to get him to lose was 4 to 6% of the Republicans that voted for him during the first time. Right.
Right.
And that worked. He lost 6% and he lost the election. Think about that for a second, though. Do you really think he's going to win back those 4 to 6% who were said after 4 years of his antics in office said, oh, man, you know, I can't do this. But now he's an indicted criminal. He's more crazy than ever online. I mean, his statements are absolutely bonkers. He's more ludicrous. He's lost a beat. He's not as engaging as he used to be. He's not funny anymore. I mean, let's be honest. You have to give him credit. He was funny, at least. Even his stupid nicknames were actually funny. I mean, he was fun to watch in a lot of ways. Hate watching was actually entertaining. He's not now. He's very bitter.
Yep.
He's angry, you know. So I think again, he has to win back that same 4 to 6% that we peeled off in that last election, be it my colleagues at Lincoln Project and others. And that's the thing. So it's easy to get, you know, we want to get worried because that's what we do as Democrats, right? We worry, but But I think the Republican Party is going to do a masterful job in nominating an indicted criminal. And when you got people on TV saying, look, it's perfectly reasonable for him to run as an indicted criminal. Okay. Yeah. I love it. You should do that. I totally go for it. So again, I welcome the Republican opportunity to, if DeSantis and Trump want to get in that convertible, hold hands and drive Thelma and Louise off the freaking cliff, I welcome them both doing it. I hope they hug on the way out, you know, and play some good old time music, because that's what they're doing. The Republican Party has decided to drive themselves off a cliff, and I'm going to enjoy watching from the bottom, giggling.
Yeah, but for me, the question then becomes again, the sideshow, we're going to get tons of craziness.
Yeah.
I think Democrats still have to come out and talk about how we're moving the country forward. Because look, I think Biden's doing great stuff. Nobody knows about it. Nobody knows anything that's going on, because the clown show is running the circus. And look, you know, Democrats are doing good things in Washington. I think they are. I think we're moving in a transformational new direction. Now, you know, ending some neoliberal nonsense on trade and on manufacturing. Yep. But you look at state houses across this country, Republicans are losing their flipping minds. We're gutting child labor laws, gutting you know, child marriage laws. I mean, it's crazy what's going on.
Right. They've gone all culture war. The state houses are insane. You know, I'm in Missouri. Here in Missouri, they passed, you know, they were part of that transgender law they passed today, not allowing kids to transition, banning kids in sports. I mean, this cycle, there was more laws. There's more bills fielded about transgenders, teens in sports than there are actually transgender teens in sports. But if they want to spend their time doing that, great. You're right. The Democrats have to tell that story. I've really enjoyed, I don't know if you follow Greg Sargent to a great extent, the Washington Post. Greg was on my podcast about a month ago, and Greg's been tracking it very well. And one of Greg's things he's saying, and we agreed passionately about, is the Democrats have to go hard. There's an opportunity for places like Governor Whitmer in Illinois, in Michigan. There's Illinois. There's Minnesota. There's opportunities for Democrats to show their agenda to protect LGBTQ rights, to protect abortion, to protect labor. And so they can set an agenda. I do think we need to look towards these states, because you're seeing it. You're seeing it in Michigan. You're seeing some really good things in the states that Democrats control. They can do some very bold things. And I think we're seeing that. I think the Biden administration has to do a good job of telling that story. We spend a lot of time talking about what they're doing in the 17 or 18 red states. But what about our blue-led states that are also doing some really revolutionary stuff? So I do think there has to be a telling of the story better. There has to be a more thorough telling of the story. But in a lot of ways, I like to freak out. You know, I've been a communicator for a long time. But I do think in many ways the Republicans are moving right into our trap. As you and I are coming on air, I got a text message from a colleague that Matt Gaetz went on his little weirdo podcast today, saying they're going to bring Tara Reid. He and Marjorie Taylor Greene were going to bring Tara Reid in to the House to do sworn testimony about how, you know, Biden assaulted her. This is a woman who was almost brought up on charges for, she committed perjury about her background in multiple trials in California as an expert witness. Again, please do. They said Comer agreed to it. Comer is actually out denying it. Okay, I don't know who this woman is. So they're doing what they do so very well. They're eating themselves alive. I think that Mr. Raskin and the others on the committees there and AOC herself and others have done a masterful job of dismantling the insanity that is the Republican House. I am, you know, we joke a lot about me being cautiously optimistic, but I still am. You know, I think I'm cautiously optimistic that the Republicans are doing a masterful job of shooting themselves in both feet on a regular basis. If the Democrats continue to not shoot themselves in the feet, they continue to focus on the policies that make a difference for average Americans and tell the fact that they're helping average Americans, I think there's a real chance.
So let me ask you, do you think DeSantis and the Republicans, you know, double, tripling, quadrupling down on this whole everything's woke, do you think this bites them?
Absolute failure. Yeah, I do. I think it's an absolute failure. I think more and more we're seeing, more Americans are seeing. There's many polls now and folks who's coming out saying the woke thing is ridiculous. That even in red states, I saw one the other day, there was a focus group. And even in red states, they're like, I don't even know what that means, except being aware that they're not, even their own people aren't buying it. It's become their talking point. And it's not working. I don't think it's working at all. I mean, I know it's, we hear the deafening sound. I'm in Missouri. I hear the deafening sound of the ridiculousness from the right. We have these real true racists in the legislature here. 40% of the legislature ran unopposed. But I don't think it's resonating. I don't see average Americans walking around saying, oh, it's woke. That's woke. You know, it's their main talking point. What's the policy that, so what is your policy that backs up your anti-wokeness? Well, we're going to ban books. We're going to, you know, it's it's failing. And the courts are finally standing up. You see the Stop Woke Law, where they call it in Florida, has been held up by the courts there as patently ridiculous. We're seeing the courts finally get their courage up to do the right things and stop some of these ridiculous acts. So I think the Republican Party is their own messaging is off. They've usually been very lockstep, but you're seeing the disintegration. The fact that DeSantis is now finally coming out about Trump is wonderful. The fact that Gates and Green are coming out and Comer's pushing back, that's a huge sign. It's one thing for McCarthy to kind of side pedal them, but when Comer and one of their own allies is saying, hold on, that's way too much.
That's a bridge too far.
So you're right. So we're – look, man, let's be honest. It's freaking March, bro. It's March. They've only been in Congress for 3 months, and they're already eating themselves alive, okay? So, you know, I said it. I did my podcast right after the election. I said, look, they're going to eat themselves alive. I'm going to get the clips. I'm going to run every darn clip, one of those clips. Okay. Every candidate running the country needs to just run clips of the insanity. You know, Boebert, you know, and her craziness, saying stupid stuff. You know, Matt Gaetz entering Chinese propaganda in the congressional record. You know, that kind of thing. So look, I'm optimistic because as much as the Democrats tend to step on their own feet, my God, the Republicans are just in a circling firewall. A circular
firing
line, just shooting each other. Right, just shooting each other. And I think that's going to continue. I think it's going to get worse. This week was really good for us. I mean, DeSantis finally coming out against Trump very directly, splitting the Republican Party now because they're all taking sides now. They have to take sides. They can't avoid it. Trump will not allow them to not. See, that's the thing, Rick. Trump will not allow them to not take sides. Okay. And so you're going to see a dismantlement of the party. So for them to come together, it'll be fascinating. If Trump doesn't get the nomination, what are they going to do? Eat each other alive? Will MAGA support anybody but Trump? They're not going to support Nikki Haley. Tim Scott's delusional. I mean, and what I really enjoy, my favorite conversation these days is my former Republican friends, the ones who are ex-Republicans like me, but haven't committed to the Democratic Party because they just can't make their goddamn minds. Sorry, I cursed. They can't make their minds. I'm saying, well, you know, Tim Scott's a pretty reasonable Republican. Y'all, are you delusional? There's no reasonable Republican left. They're not going to win a primary. They're not going to get voted by Republicans. Look, I'm out here in Missouri. I see what people are saying out here. Tim Scott, Nikki Haley, none of those guys have got a prayer.
Mike Pompeo, no Chris
Sununu. No, Pompeo's a boob. None of those. Sununu's a boob. I mean, these people just don't have it. And it's going to be really interesting to see them all eat themselves alive. So, look, as much as I bemoan our Democratic colleagues and their failure to communicate, I do have to say, I can't believe I'm saying this publicly, they're doing better. I mean, Biden's doing better. Biden is messaging better. Biden has got people on staff now reaching out to people like me to say, hey, by the way, did you see this new thing? I'm like, oh, thanks. You know, I mean, they're actually sending me stuff like, wow, okay, I didn't know this. Thanks for sending it to me. You know, they're reaching out to people, say, hey, this is what we're doing. Can you tell the story? They're doing a much better job. Again, they've got their feet under them a bit after 2 years. I'm seeing improvement. I mean, I am seeing improvement on the Democratic side.
Well, and again, about 40 years behind, so it's good. It's good. It's good, right?
Yeah. You know, look. I'm a generous man. I think you're being very cynical. 20 years, just 20. Why are you so cynical, Rick?
I got to get your thoughts on. I want to change topics real quick. I don't know.
Okay.
Did you see the article of the New York Times with this Ben Barnes, former lieutenant governor of Texas?
No, I'm embarrassed to say I didn't.
He came out and said that, you know, all that stuff from 1980 that Reagan, the Reagan people told the Iranians to hold the hostages.
Oh, yes. Sorry about that. Yeah. About Iran. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Shocking, right?
No.
I was being sarcastic as well. We all knew that, right? I mean, they got released on Reagan's inauguration day, for goodness sake. I mean, it's completely not shocking, right?
Yeah, and I come back to, why now? Was it to rub it in Carter's nose? Is it to clean his conscience? Was it to rub it in the American people's faces? I don't know, because, you know, I go back and look, I've had other people go, you know, well, Nixon did the same thing, you know, when he ran against Humphrey with the Vietnamese. We've got all these crimes of the past that never seem to get... That never seem to get, you know, people get indicted or held accountable for. And yet you go back and you think about, well, how different would this country be if in 68 Nixon doesn't win? How different would this country be if in 80 Reagan doesn't win? How different is this country in 2000 if Bush doesn't win? How different are we as a nation? How much better off would we be without all the lies and all of the... How better off would we have been had we gone a different direction? And I see 2024 as that next kind of moment. And this Trump thing is part of that.
I agree in every way. I mean, you're not wrong in any way. It is we've spent a lot of time with our opponents being very willing to do anything to win. And people, the story just mentioned, we allowed Americans to languish in captivity for political gain. We allowed war to continue for political gain. They're willing to do anything. And as soon as we recognize that, I mean, that's the one pleasure I did get, for me being on that Lincoln Project when I was, is, I used to joke that, I'd never worn a black hat before, but, I used to tell people, say that, well, the Lincoln Project guys would make me uncomfortable. And I'd say, look, every team needs somebody on their team who's going to wear the black hat and do the bad things, right? Every soccer team, every football team needs that guy who's willing to take a red card for the team, right? They need the Jamie Tartt of the Richmond, AFC Richmond, right? They need that guy who's going to do the things that need to be done to do the fight. We don't do a good job of that on our side to actually fight, right? We don't bring the dirt back. And we remain that way. And we remain idealistic
about
it.
When they go low, Fred.
Right, which I'm not a big fan of, right? Which is weird because I'm really an uptight, straight shooting kind of guy. I write very tight contracts when I shouldn't, things like that. And it ends up biting you in the butt. But at some point, we have to realize that the future of our nation is at stake here. And if we don't fight the way they're fighting, if we don't take them to their word and hold them accountable. And that's why I've come around on people like Miss AOC and others who are willing to take the fight. And as I travel the country and I talk in my current work and projects that I've been working on, I hear from average Americans, average Democrats, like, we got to fight, man. It's not this kumbaya crap. We got to get to work.
Yep.
We have to fight everywhere. We have to run candidates everywhere at every level. And we have to stand up. We have to stand up for what we believe in. And sometimes, even if you believe in very kind and gentle things, you got to actually fight for them. I mean, the thing about being an old soldier, I don't know if it's the 20th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq. So my last war that I was in, I've been in a couple of them. And, I reflect on fighting and we need fighters. We need to actually fight for what's right. We need to fight for our freedom. I remember sitting in Iraq talking to locals about what freedom meant, and their version was very different than ours. And I remember thinking to myself, man, thank God I live in America where these aren't the issues. And you know what, Rick? They are the issues now. The political violence, threats of violence, people being threats of kidnapping like Governor Whitmer and people being jailed, who have tried to take over our government. We have got to stand up and fight, which is why I'm sure a lot of us are angry about these things. I'm thrilled with Jack Smith. A lot of people have been saying, well, and of course, Alvin Bragg now. These are tiny crimes. I can't with your prosecutor like that. Look, you're liberal like me. We've got people serving lifetime prison sentences and their three strike laws. I just read an article about a black woman who's got a life sentence right now because she was caught. Her third strike was 2 ounces of marijuana, and they're serving life sentences. There are no small crimes, and I always take solace in the fact that Al Capone went to jail for tax
evasion.
so maybe
what brings Trump down is hush money to a porn star.
If hush money to a porn star, or
there's a
listening
legacy
to Tom Fitton, or listening to Tom Fitton, Mr. Wears a Shirt Too Small, say don't turn those documents back to the government, they're yours, gets him thrown in jail, or trying to get Georgia to have a special session of their legislature to make him the president, gets him thrown in jail. I don't give a damn which one law. I don't give a damn which law it is. I just want his fat ass in jail. And if he rots in jail and that's where he ends up spending the rest of his life, I'm fine. But I don't care what crime put him there.
Yeah. See, I got to tell you, I don't think he spends a minute in jail. But we'll see.
Hope springs eternal, my friend. Hope springs eternal. I think I was just beating you up for being so cynical. How did you get so cynical?
I've seen this. Look, we just went through. Nixon got away with it. Reagan got away with it. We could spend days talking about all the criminals who got away with stuff. But that woman with the pot, man.
Why do you gotta use facts, Rick?
But Fred, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff.
Oh, my pleasure, my friend.
Hope folks will take a look at the podcast on Democracy with FP Wellman.
On Democracy, FP Wellman. Available everywhere. Apple, Spotify, YouTube. New episode coming out tomorrow. Reflections on the 20th anniversary of the war in Iraq. I brought reporter Leo Shane, who's the dean of the Veterans Military Media Reporting. He's been doing it since 2004. We have a wonderful conversation about how much the veteran and military communities have changed in the last 20 years. And I hope people tune in. It's available every Thursday.
There you go. Good stuff. Fred, I appreciate the time.
Likewise.
Fred Wellman, make sure you check out the podcast. We'll get links out on social media. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it's interesting that Fred pointed out that that the Republicans are basically eating themselves. You knew when they took the House in January it was going to be entertaining. You knew the crazies were going to suck all the oxygen out of the air and it was going to be a whole bunch of insanity. You knew the clowns were going to come to the front. You know, people like, you know, the Marjorie Three Names and the forehead guy. And, of course, Gun Fetish Barbie. Lauren Boebert today tweeted out, yes, it is either. I love this. When we speak up loud enough, we're heard. She said, DirecTV and Newsmax have reached a deal and Newsmax will return. She said, this is a huge win for we the people. And understand, they were playing this whole victim thing for weeks. I mean, you know, the Newsmax is being politically silenced and Newsmax is, you know, being mistreated by DirecTV. And look, when this first happened, I said, you know, the reality is this is DirecTV's not going to pay them like they pay Fox. Fox has got a sweetheart deal where they make money off of every subscriber, regardless if you watch Fox News or not. So whether you're a Fox watcher or not, you're paying Fox News. I don't know if you know that. And there's a whole movement now to drop Fox. Newsmax wanted the same deal. They didn't want to have to go out and sell ads. They wanted you to pay them to not watch their channel. And DirecTV is like, no, you're not getting that. So what happened now is you have this deal. Newsmax has finally acquiesced. They're going to take the deal that they were offered. Yep, we'll put you on like we do a lot of people, but you're not getting anything for it. You can air your program, you can sell your advertising, you can do all this stuff, but we are not paying you. Now, again, you know, as I said the other day, sophistry is the word of the day. When people deliberately lie, when they deliberately misrepresent, when they deliberately take these positions that are really just crazy and knowingly lie. Look, I know Lauren Boebert's a dumb person. I get that. But I also know that she knows she's lying. But this is to feed the outrage candy to the base. This is to keep the people even dumber than her going, yeah, they're silencing us. Nope. This was all about money. It always was about the money. But again, you've got these political operatives who knew what they were doing. They were pressuring DirecTV. They were extorting DirecTV into paying Newsmax to spew their garbage. And good on DirecTV for standing up and saying no. Because look, if they've got to pay Newsmax, they're going to have to pay a whole lot of other people. And look, DirecTV is going, I don't know, away at some point. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1941. That was the day that the generators began to operate at one of the most massive construction projects ever built, the Grand Coulee Dam. The dam generates hydropower from the Columbia River in Washington State. The completed structure is the largest concrete dam in the world. It's 550 feet tall at its highest point and only 57 feet shy of being a mile wide. The dam is a massive 450 feet thick at its base, tapering to 30 feet at the top. It contains nearly three times the concrete of the famed Hoover Dam. 8,000 people attended the opening ceremony. They were led in a parade by the Grand Coulee High School Marching Band. But not everyone celebrated the dam. The project submerged fishing sites and burial grounds sacred to Native Americans. One area it submerged was Kettle Falls, a place where Native Americans are thought to have fished for 7,000 years. The project also took its toll on its workers. 77 men died while building the dam. One was Gerald Cobble, a 32-year-old worker who was struck and killed by a heavy steel bucket. During the tough times of the Great Depression, men had flocked to Washington in hopes of landing a job. Thousands found work on the project. The workers labored by shifts around the clock to construct the massive foundation. The Coulee Dam became known as the biggest thing on earth and inspired this song by Woody Guthrie.
Well, the world has seven wonders.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Towers, I guess you know them well. But now the greatest wonder is in Uncle Sam's fair land. It's that King Columbia River and the big Grand Coulee Dam.
Exciting news, people. Utopia is on the rise. Space Commander Elon Musk has announced that his magnificence, i.e. him, intends to construct his very own private town on 3,500 acres of farmland near his new Tesla plant southeast of Austin, Texas. More than a town, Musk explains that he will create utopia in Texas, promising an ecological paradise where his Tesla workers can live and do fun things like swimming, pickleball, and paying rent to him. The gabillionaire is certainly rich enough to erect his own Muskopolis, but alas, the utopia name is already taken. Indeed, I've been to Utopia, Texas, a small town west of San Antonio that was founded in 1855 by, cover your ears, Elon, Swiss socialists. Of course, history shows that a company town is ruled by the company, not by residents, much less socialists. And Musk has made clear at Tesla, Twitter, etc., that his personal whims rule over workers, consumers, our environment, and even truth. Which brings us to that ecological workers' paradise he's promising. Even as one arm of his empire was extolling his vision of a Garden of Eden situated along the beauty of the Colorado River, another arm was scheming to pollute it. Musk is asking Texas corporate control regulators to let him use the site to dump 140,000 gallons a day of his industrial wastewater into the Colorado. Excuse me, but that turns Elon's ecological paradise into a fraud. Worse, it adds up to Musk pouring 50 million gallons a year of his waste into the river, fouling the main water source for dozens of towns and hundreds of farms downstream. This is Jim Hightower saying Musk wants to extend the long sordid history in our country of company town hucksters, and his latest Texas scam is proof that we should never trust a billionaire promising us paradise.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So today across the country, Starbucks workers at more than 100 stores across the country went on strike, letting customers know that about the wages, the hours, the conditions, and the fact that Starbucks has been, you know, like the poster child for union busting. and the fact that they're nowhere close to a contract and saying, look, you know, we demand Starbucks to negotiate in good faith. The law. I also find it interesting that Bernie Sanders, basically subpoenaed, you know, said was going to subpoena Howard Schultz, the CEO or the acting CEO of Starbucks, to come testify. And he resigns. He retired. He stepped down. Going to hand it off to someone else. Still not sure if he's going to get to go testify. I don't think so. I think this was a dodge. But I find it very interesting. And this is what happens when people organize, when people's voices come together, and we collectively demand. This is good stuff. Here in Pennsylvania, in my state, there's a state representative pushing a piece of legislation to give workers the right to organize and make it a constitutional amendment, you know, kind of like the good folks in Illinois did. And here to share some thoughts on where we are in this process, I've asked Nick Piscatello to come talk with us. Nick is a Pennsylvania state representative representing the 38th legislative district out in Allegheny County. Nick, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick. I'm looking forward to the discussion.
So where are we with this constitutional amendment? This is something I've been saying we should have been done decades ago. Thank goodness you've moved on this. Where are we?
Yeah, so the great news is that in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, Democrats have taken the majority for the first time in 12 years. And so for the first time in over a decade, we have a chance to play offense on workers' issues, workers' protections, and working hard to make sure the economy works for everyone and not just a select few. And part of that is a pro-worker agenda that our whole caucus that we want to pursue. And one of the bills that I've been talking about really is emulating what the legislature in Illinois did is to enshrine in our Constitution a right to organize and basically ban the concept of right to work as it exists in every other state, many states in the South. And so, you know, now that we have the majority in Pennsylvania House, we can start talking about these ideas and, you know, having that debate about how do we make sure the economy works for everyone and not just a handful of folks. And, you know, whether or not this amendment goes all the way through, you know, there's a ton of hurdles to amend our Constitution. We want to have that debate. We want to stand up and say we're standing up for workers. We believe in an American right to organize in this country. And we want to make sure that everyone in Pennsylvania has access to the opportunity.
No, you know, as I've said for years on this program, the states who have delineated themselves the so-called right to work state where there are no rights and no work. We know that they have lower wages. We know their workers are covered with less health and retirement security. And we also know jobs are much less safe. All things that I think are bad for Pennsylvania, I think for all workers in this country, mm-hmm. but particular in my state where I live and I have to work and where my family has to live and work. So it seems to me that this is reasonable. And the more opportunities we have to say that out loud, that this state has good wages for workers because unions make sure that people are paid a reasonable wage, that people have health security, retirement security, and that if we do away with that, those things go away even more. I think that's it's beneficial for us.
Yeah, I mean, if you think of, I'm from Pittsburgh, Western PA, our heritage here in this part of the country was, you know, the city that built America or the city that helped us win World War II because we built the steel and that, you know, build the high rises across the country or built the armaments that helped us win World War II, right? All of that through many decades of blood, you know, blood and tears, built kind of the union movement, and especially in the industrial sector in our country. And so I'm proud to be from here, and I'm proud of that legacy in this area and across Pennsylvania. So why shouldn't we stand up and say this worked for our previous generations? It got all of us to where we are now. It should work for the current generation. And, you know, you talked a little bit about the Starbucks workers going out on strike. The good thing about us being in the majority is that we can start talking about policies that help workers like the Starbucks workers that are trying to unionize and being opposed. You know, I have colleagues in the state house that have proposed legislation that ensures health care for striking workers, because that's a big deal. You know, the writers and some of the other folks at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, one of the oldest newspapers in the country, have been on strike for many months now, I think over 6 months at this point. You know, the family that owns that paper is just trying to bust the union. And they're cutting off their health care. They're doing everything they can to try and squeeze those people into breaking the union and accepting less than what they deserve. And we have bills that would help them. stand up for their rights. And that's something that we in the Pennsylvania House Democratic Caucus are standing up for every day now. And now that we control the agenda, we have the ability to move those issues forward and talk about them in a way that's meaningful and can help workers.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I've said for a while, I would like to see legislation, like you've said, to ensure that workers don't lose their health insurance, that they maybe can collect unemployment so that they have an opportunity. And another one that I came across while I was in Iowa, that workers who don't want to cross a picket line have the opportunity without being attacked or any retribution against them to not cross a picket line, that they get to collect unemployment and keep their benefits because they don't want to have to scab on someone's picket line. I think that's important too.
Yeah, and just another one that's coming to the top of my mind, you know, Starbucks and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette management and some of these companies, they're able to write off the costs of their union busting expenses on their state taxes. You know, the lawyers that they pay way much more per hour than what their workers are asking for, they can go and turn that into a business deduction. And I have a bill in the Pennsylvania House that would get rid of that in Pennsylvania state taxes. So there's a lot of different parts of this discussion. And like I said, now that we have the majority in the Pennsylvania House, we can start talking about these issues and the best way to address them. We want to have the debate. We're standing up for workers and working Pennsylvanians. We want to talk about these issues and move these things forward.
See, this is why, I say all the time, elections have consequences. The people that we put into the halls of power matter. Folks like you who are going to stand up and fight for working people, I think are worth gold. And we need more people who are going to do this. And yet, what I see across this country, I see a lot of Republicans, the most important issue to them is we got to ban drag shows. We don't care about you putting food on the table. We don't care about your health and retirement security. We're going to go after some group you're probably never going to see, but you'll be safer for it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, as a Western Pennsylvania Democrat, the number one issue has always been economics.
Yep.
How can we help people get good jobs with safe careers, health care for their family? They can put food on the table every night. They have a chance to move up in the world you know, how do we create the conditions that make that the most possible? Those are the issues that we're focused on. And you say elections have consequences. I can't agree anymore. I didn't mention this yet, but in the Pennsylvania House, there's 203 members. We have a one seat majority. First time in 12 years, Democrats have the majority in the House, and it's by one single seat. And so, you know, pick any district across any House district across Pennsylvania. That district is the deciding vote. In the majority. And so the reason we can talk about some of these pro-worker, pro-family, pro-jobs issues are because of some voters in one district that flipped the district or kept somebody in that seat. And now we can talk about moving the Pennsylvania forward for workers rather than playing defense on those issues as we have for the last decade plus.
Now, if we're going to make inroads in the Senate, you're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Pennsylvania State Representative Nick Piscitano. He's the representative for the 38th Legislative District here in Pennsylvania, representing the folks out in Allegheny County. He's also the chair of the House Democratic Policy Subcommittee on Labor, Energy, and Development. I want to get your thoughts on this bill these bills that you put forward, the Price You See bill. This is kind of as I'm understanding it, kind of a takeoff of President Biden's junk fees push. How important is this? I know Ticketmaster seems to be at the front. How much response are you getting from this, and how important do you think this is to people?
Yeah. So, you know, we talk a lot about on the income ish side of things, right? How much money are people getting paid? You know, what good jobs do they have access to? But equally important is how are they getting ripped off on the expenses that they have to pay? So whether that's price gouging on eggs or baby formula or whatever, but also how are they getting ripped off on hidden fees and what the Biden administration is calling junk fees? You know, these fees that just nobody really knows what they're for. Nobody really has an idea why they cost what they cost, but they get tacked on to the end of the bill every time, no matter what. And the biggest example right now is, you know, if you buy concert tickets on Ticketmaster, you know, it says the concert ticket. I looked it up today to go see a Beyonce show here in Pittsburgh in August. The cheapest ticket on Ticketmaster was $100. You know, so then I click all the way through. $100 doesn't seem bad. You get all the way to the end. There's like $27 added on. Nobody knows what that's for. You know, it just says service fee. you don't know if it's higher or lower for a Beyonce show versus, you know, a Guns N' Roses show or whatever. It's just some arbitrary fee that they tack on to the end. They don't tell you about it up front. And at the end, they put you in this position where, you know, you were planning to spend $100, but, you know, what's another $30, right? And then you get to the point where you're paying all these extra fees. Another person tweeted me an example where they paid $80 for four tickets and $90 in junk fees.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you're paying more in fees than what you're actually paying for the tickets. And so what my legislation is, and, you know, the Biden administration is really taking on the legality of those fees. You know, the federal government has a lot of jurisdiction on whether they can charge the fees or not. But to supplement those efforts on the state level, we can require that any mandatory fees on any price are included in the displayed and advertised price up front. So rather than my Beyonce ticket saying it's $100 and rather deceptively because there's mandatory fees added on later, it should say that the ticket is actually $124, which is the true price that someone would have to pay to buy it. And so just by, you know, cracking down on some of these ways that companies cheat to squeeze an extra few dollars out of most people, we can provide that transparency and say, this is a free and fair market. You guys charge what you want, but you're going to be upfront about what it costs. And you're not going to try and hide all these fees later down the line so that people don't have a good idea what they're actually paying for. And, you know, maybe $100 for Beyonce is good for somebody, but $125 is too much. And they should know that upfront. They should know the price that they have to pay upfront. You know, so when we're talking about income for working families, that's one decision, but we're also trying to crack down on making sure that working families aren't subjugated to unfair fees in the marketplace.
No, I mean, what's frustrating me is I still remember the old days where you could go to the venue and buy tickets. You can't even do that anymore. It seems like Ticketmaster has a monopoly on this. And because no matter which one of those services you use, it still goes back to them. You know, I think Vivid Seats one time. I used StubHub another time. And it all comes back to Ticketmaster. But I use these other sites. How is it that it keeps coming back here?
The federal government dropped the ball when they allowed Ticketmaster and Live Nation to merge a decade ago, and they have just gobbled up a huge significant portion of that market, and it's uncompetitive. It is a monopoly.
Now, real quick, you've got another piece of legislation on motorcycle safety. Now, I didn't realize, and I read your press release, that, you know, if I buy a car and it's a lemon, I can take it back and for a year and they have to fix it. I didn't realize that didn't carry over to motorcycles. I thought motor transportation all covered. It doesn't. Your bill would make that kind of uniform. Is that what I'm getting?
Yeah. So the Lemon Law has actually really done a very good job of making automotive manufacturers responsible for any kind of factory defects. You have about a year. If you buy a brand new car and it's a lemon and there's some defect, you have a year to take it back to the manufacturer for a replacement or for it to be fixed. If you buy a motorcycle, though, too bad. You're out of luck. And so it's a common sense bill. It got almost all the way through the Pennsylvania General Assembly last year. It got through the House, almost through the Senate. We're hoping to get it all the way through the Senate here. My, you know, a former colleague who retired last year, Pam Snyder from Southwestern PA, got it almost all the way across the finish line. So we're going to try and get it there all the way in her honor this year. So it's just another consumer protection. You know, if you shell out the money, your hard-earned money for a motorcycle, maybe something you've wanted your entire life, and you get unlucky enough to get one that's defective through no fault of your own, that you shouldn't be on the hook for that. The manufacturer should be responsible for that.
Well, it's good to have somebody looking out for working people. Again, I look at the stuff that you're doing. I look at the stuff that some of my Republican friends in other states are doing. I want somebody going to stand up for working people, not beat them up. But, Nick, I appreciate the time. Keep up the great work. And I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thanks, Rick. Talk to you soon.
Good stuff, as always. Nick Piscitano, Pennsylvania State Representative. The good stuff here. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
Are you tired of think tank
bank-approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. At some time during your life, you've probably read a book or heard a story by Mark Twain. But did you know that this renowned American author was also a strong supporter of labor? In 1835, he was born Samuel Clemens in the town of Hannibal, Missouri. His father died of pneumonia when Samuel was only 11. The next year, he became a printer's apprentice, working for 4 years for little pay, often under horrible conditions. As a young man, he tried his hand as a riverboat pilot on the Mississippi River and as a miner in Nevada and California. He took inspiration from the people and stories he encountered on his travels, writing under the pen name Mark Twain. Twain was a lifelong member of the International Typographical Union, and on this day in labor history, the year was 1886. Mark Twain delivered a powerful speech to the Monday Evening Club in Hartford, Connecticut. In it, he imagined the power of a united labor movement. He said, "When all the bricklayers and all the machinists and all the miners and blacksmiths and printers and hod carriers and stevedores and house painters and brakemen and engineers and factory hands and all the shop girls and all of the sewing machine women and all of the telegraph operators, in a word, all the myriads of toilers in whom is slumbering the reality of that thing which you call power. When these rise, call the vast spectacle by any deluding name that will please your ear, but the fact remains that a nation has risen." In his speech, Twain painted a vivid picture of workers and of the nation rising together as one. As attacks against unions and working people mount today, now more than ever, we need such a vision of solidarity. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Like us on Facebook and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two. Couple of interesting, fun emails. I want to start with this one. No name, but made me laugh today. This is one of those things where I love when emails make me laugh. I get a lot of stuff from people who want to be mean, who want to say outrageous stuff. There's always a comment. There's always something that, well, we're going to show you. We show you how smart I am or whatever. There's always that. And look, I appreciate that, and I like going back and forth and debating with folks. There's always, you know, the ones, hey, we love what you do. You keep it up. Thank you. And I love those. Thank you for everyone who thinks that I do this well. I appreciate that. And then, of course, you know, we've got the folks who, oh, you're an idiot. I hope bad things happen to you. I'm not going to say nice things about those folks. I do usually respond in a very creative way sometimes. But this one made me laugh today. This one got my attention. He writes, "Rick, did you know Wisconsin has joined 20 other states in legalizing the liquefying of dead humans?" Yep. "They are flushing them down the toilet," he writes, or she. "This is how they're covering up all of those people killed by the vaccines. Listen to this clip." And he sent a clip of a guy who claims to be some health hunter or something. And basically just reiterating what the email says. He says, "Listen to the clip as they talk about how these dead people are being turned into bio sludge and spread on the crops. They are feeding the dead to the living. Soylent Green is real. It sounds crazy, but it is happening, and no one's talking about it. Will you be brave enough?" Yeah, I'm going to be brave enough to mock you. Because, yes, there are people who who are liquefying. You're right. They are liquefying people. This is not some nefarious plot to go and you know, get all the people who have been vaccinated and spread them all over. That's not what's happening here. Right now, we have two ways to dispose of us when we die. We dig a big hole and drop you down in it, or we light you on fire. One takes up a lot of room. One takes up a lot of energy. The other one, what they're trying to do now and what states like Wisconsin have done, is they're going to this what's called alkaline hydrolysis. Basically just dissolving the body in water. They put it in heated water with lye. I guess after a couple of hours, you know, everything comes off the bones, so to speak. And evidently it's safe enough to just flush you down the drain. The remaining bones are crushed up into ash, and you can scatter the ash or the whatever wherever else. It's another way of disposing of bodies. And this is the important part. This is the important part. This is not conspiratorial. They've been doing this for decades. Whenever you donate your body to, say, I don't know, one of those places for science, this is how they get rid of you when you do that. Now, I have said when it's my time to go, I've told my wife, the cheapest method possible. You know, whatever, if you can just put me out with the trash and they'll take me, go that route. That would be the, or better yet, if you can find someone who will pay you by the pound, go that route. If you can get money for me, do that. But this seems reasonable. In a place where we're burying people, taking up real estate, in a place where we're using a lot of energy to send you up in smoke, this seems somewhat reasonable. And a number of states, and my emailer is correct, 21 states now have made this legal or have passed legislation to do it on a bigger scale. Seems rational. Now, this is where this all gets weird for me, because, you know, they're spreading it on the crops. I haven't read that. I haven't found where they're taking up all of your dead human bits and spreading you all over. I haven't seen that. And I don't know that we would be very good fertilizer. Considering we've got all kinds in my neighborhood right now, the manure smell is bad. And there's part of me that goes, I don't know. Would we smell worse in a dissolved state? And would it work? I don't know. But the part that gets me, again, you could make the argument they're dissolving us in water and then they're putting us on. Okay, that I can see how you go there. But this now the next step, the conspiratorial step of it's all the people who died from the vaccine. That's a nefarious plot. We've uncovered it and they're going to come for you, too. Is kind of crazy. And I'm a little freaked out by it. But again, this is what happens when you have people who, you know, they want to believe the worst. And there are people out there who are trying to make money and clickbait to get people to sign on to every conspiracy or crazy bit of nonsense. It is what it is. So I hope that helps. And I hope this makes me brave enough because I did talk about it. So I hope I'm brave. But I hope you'll email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I want to throw out a couple of other things really quick. Evidently, there's a deadly fungus spreading across the U.S. So if COVID wasn't bad enough, the fungus is among us. And, well, this could kill us. If you're a little dry-eyed, you know, if you wear contacts and your eyes get a little dry, those eye drops, they could kill you. Evidently, the death toll has increased. There are, across the country, 32,000 infections, according to hospitals, and an estimated 2,700 people have died from eye drops, the artificial tears they put in your eyes, because evidently there's some bacteria that I can't pronounce, some antibiotic-resistant bacteria that I can't pronounce, an aggressive one that are in these 10 different brands of artificial tears that have been recalled under the EzraCare Delsim Pharma eye drops. They're all part of this India-based global pharma healthcare. If you've got one of those, check. Because some people have had to have their eyes removed because it's so bad. So that's real. The other thing, not real. This important. The other thing, not so much. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, grab ours. Appreciate you being here. Look forward to having you back again real soon.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media app.
News.